It's Razzle Dazzle Radio, and it's the holidays. So I was thinking, remember A Christmas Carol and remember all those ghosts from past, present, and future? I'm surrounded by some right here at our radio station, and one of them is our special guest, Rick LaRocca. So I don't want to call you a ghost, Rick, but you did.
And you don't want to call him a Scrooge.
And I don't want to call you that. So, and you're not Tiny Tim. However, let's talk about your early beginnings in the arts in Columbia. 70s.
Okay.
What was going on?
Well, I was a young dude, about one and a half. No. It actually started with me before I got to Columbia. I grew up in Ellicott City before Columbia was even here. So I'm pre-Columbia. And of course, I was in music before, that. We moved to Ellicott City when I was three. But my father was a band leader and vocalist. And so I was singing early. Even in school, when they would do the music class and everyone was singing, I learned quickly to stop singing in music class because I sounded different than everybody else. My father was singing The Shadow of Your Smile, and that's what I would sing in the car and stuff and all those kind of songs. So I was kind of embarrassed that I sounded different than everybody else. And then once I got to high school, everyone saying, come to choir, we could really use you as a tenor. I wasn't into group singing. I was a soloist.
And what high school was this, Rick?
That was Glenel High School.
Ah, okay.
When I was about, I can't remember whether it was 8, 9, or even 10 or 11, before Columbia was even started, it was all woods and farms.
No, I remember.
And we were riding in the car from our home in Ellicott City to, for some reason, to my dad's office in Silver Spring, south on 29, one lane each way, dirt shoulder. And my mom pointed off to the right. There's going to be a city over there. I don't know at that young age. I didn't even really stick. But years later, when I was a teenager, probably around 16, I had gotten introduced to the arts in Columbia when I was at Glenel High School. Ann Allen had just moved to Columbia and was at Slayton House just grabbing people to be in her theater.
As only she could grab.
Yep. Yes, and she started what was called The Happening as her first production, and that was going to be poets and musicians and dancers and everything. And one of my friends who had been to one of the first auditions came to me and said, you've got to get to be part of this. I've given your name to Marty Noss and Ann Allen, who were going to be at this audition. I didn't know them. This was like 9th grade or 10th grade.
Right.
And so I showed up at Ann Allen's house on Thicket Lane, and Belinda, the dancer, was there. Larry Parker, who was a poet, was there. And I had put some of his poems to music already.
Nice.
So that's how I kind of got drawn in. So I showed up and I played a couple of my original songs. And one of them was Sweet Susan. And it was about a friend of mine who I sang with, her sister and a couple of other sisters. And she said, well, we're going to put a choreograph to that one. And it was in 6/8. Kind of a waltzy feel. It was about Susan, and what was interesting about Susan, you really didn't know her. She would not let her person, her who she was, come through. She was very quiet. So that's what it was about. She kind of held to herself. So we gave a performance at the happening of that. It was a beautiful choreographed piece. And the lead dancer turned out to be someone named Susan, but it was a different Susan, Susan Thompson. Mm. And her father was like a state's attorney or something like that. He was in the legal locally, Dwight Thompson. And evidently he was obviously in the audience. And Ann told me later that he was crying throughout. Because here was his daughter.
Right.
And it kind of related to, as a teenager, not relating to him. And it was very emotional. As a young teenager, I was surprised. You know, I didn't think that would have that effect. But the choreography and the lyrics and the music that went with it just was so emotional. And that was, I don't know if it was a turning point, but was it an enlightening?
It was the happening.
It was the happening. And I remember shortly, sometime thereafter, I'm between rehearsals because, you know, and it was really about dance. Not really about dance, but at that time.
Life was about dance.
Yes. So there were a lot of dance rehearsals. Yes. And my girlfriend at the time was one of the dancers. So I'd be at all the rehearsals. Katie Hicks.
Carolyn likes to get the scoops
Who became very friends. I'm so grateful for Facebook because I can stay in touch with Sarah Whale, Elizabeth Carpenter.
All your old girls.
Yeah, all Katie's friends, and then we were very close. And,
I'm also interested in whether or not you've ever continued with the Susan piece, whether you can still hum the lyrics or sing the lyrics.
Sweet Susan, where do you go? Where can I find you? It's on and on. So as you can see, as the father of Susan, I can't connect, you know. Where are you? Where can I find you? So I got that. But we were between rehearsals or between where she needed me. And I was out in the Village Green because the rehearsal was all at Slayton House in Wild Lake Village.
That's so funny for you to even refer to it as that now because you don't hear that Village Green.
And so it was a circle, of course, around, you know, inside the, between the buildings.
Right.
You know, it was a circle and Slayton House was on the side there. And I'm playing my guitar in the Village Green, just playing my songs and probably writing something, being creative. And it hit me. Oh, this is the city my mother was talking about.
It's a circle after all. That's fabulous.
And that had been years back, and I hadn't thought about that.
Right.
From the time she said it, it stuck, but I didn't know it stuck. Mm-hmm. But when I was there, it all came back.
And you were a part of it.
And I have
been for 50 years.
Yes.
And all of these other ghosts in the room
50.
Have, too.
Yeah. It has been that long.
Oh, my goodness.
But I don't feel it. So that was, I followed the story of the beginnings of Columbia.
Right.
And have so been inspired by that. And at the time, I was going to Glenelg High School because I lived out in West Friendship.
Okay.
We had moved out there. So when I was in ninth grade or so, turned out all my friends, most of them were from Columbia, but usually I didn't know it, all of them. You know, some that were I was doing music with, I did. And I'd practiced music with my friends in Columbia and in Bryant Woods, so I knew that area. And I became so familiar with the concept of Columbia. And that was very powerful to me at those young teenage years. And as I got to 19 and 20 and 21, I would just, any interview with Jim Rouse, I was just drawn to. My friend Scott Kramer had done a whole big interview thing with him. So I got the whole story of that. I ended up getting so involved, immersed in the music scene and even the dance scene because I was so related to, you know, my friends in that. And I learned so much from Ann Allen as a teacher, and I later become a guitar teacher. In high school, I started teaching guitar. I got my first job at Jade Palace in a Chinese restaurant.
Oh, my goodness. I haven't looking heard
for
that
work.
Name in
yeah.
a while
And that
either.
Was like $4.85 an hour. And a friend of mine at school said she wanted to learn guitar. Would I teach her? And so I went to her house and gave an hour lesson. It was like $5 a half hour, which I was doing $5 an hour for her. And her father gave me like a $20 check at the end for the whole month. And to me at that time, 16, 17 years old, that was pretty cool.
Absolutely.
So I quit the Jade Palace and got a bunch of students. In high school, I became a guitar teacher and made my living at that till probably 1980.
When I think of you, I connect you with coffee houses somehow.
Well, yeah.
And of course, that's a real sign of the 70s right there. So
yes, yes.
Before we go into the future or the current part of your career right now, I'm going to continue with the ghosts from the past. We're going to take a tiny little break because Deborah DeVoe, who danced with Ann Allen and probably is here in the studio, and she's going to also talk about the Nutcracker.
In the studio as well, and looking around at Carolyn Kellerman and Rick LaRocca and Deborah DeVoe and Judy Templeton and myself, it's amazing because except for the lovely Chris who is doing the taping, we have 5 decades of Columbia and Howard County history sitting around the microphones here today. And Wild Lake and Slayton House in particular was really the first building that was built in the new city at the time back in the early 70s. And it is still functioning today and is actually the home for my theater, Silhouette Stages, Judy Templeton's theatrical group. And back then it was the home for John Taylor, the Kinderman, and who I remember vividly taking my kids to see his performances there. And Deborah, have you ever performed at Slayton House?
I actually had a dance school at Slayton House for 10 years.
Did.
I danced Kaleidoscope. And I also took dance classes with Ann Allen. And when I first came to Columbia, I didn't know where else to take classes. And I saw the Columbia Flyer, and they had 2 dance writers, Carolyn Kellerman and Jenna Brown.
Oh.
And I saw these wonderful photos all over it, and I thought, I have come to the right city.
I have arrived.
And so I found classes with Ann Allen, and they were exciting in their own way. We did those long lows across the floor. And then there was an opening, and I started my own school, and I had it there for 10 years.
Yep. Oh, gosh. Well, we can't mention Anne without mentioning her cigarette burning down while she was teaching us warm-ups. I mean, we just can't. And, of course, Rick was part of that time then as well. And and that's what we were just remembering fondly. And, of course, like you, Carolyn was writing, and then I actually got to meet her as my instructor. So more on that another day.
And at that time, I remember vividly also that Carolyn was also teaching in her basement.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Yes, she
and
was.
All the costumes she had stored.
A lot of my centennial students took classes there. My daughter was over there on occasion. And so one of the originals also, Mrs. Carolyn Kellerman.
So, Rick, take us then. So, coffee houses in the 70s, right?
Yes.
Mrs. Z's.
Oh,
does that ring a bell
Mrs.
for you?
Mrs. Z's, yes, yes. I ended up transferring to Wild Lake High School. Dr. Jenkins, the principal, had come to Glen Elg to talk about the new school coming.
The new school,
oh,
yeah.
And when they talked, I was always in the concert band in school since, you know, fourth grade, playing first chair clarinet. And so music, you know, and clarinet, and that's all I had. And I signed up for orchestra once at Glen Elg, and I got there the first day, and there were only 2 of us, a violinist and me. And but they kept the class going.
Wow.
But the teacher would never show up. But I'd show up in the classroom and get my guitar out of the cabinet and play guitar the whole time. But then when I heard about electronic music and classical guitar lessons and all this great stuff at Wild Lake, I wrote to the superintendent of music of Howard County and asked if it would be possible for me to transfer to Wild Lake, which I did.
Was that Gene Miller?
That was.
And who were the music teachers at Glen Elg High School and at Wild Lake?
Bob Johnston was my teacher. That was before.
Okay. Before Barry Ansel.
Before Barry. And
okay.
years later, I wished I had been part of that scene. And but I started getting involved in Columbia then, and that since I was going to high school there, I would sing in the hallways between classes, and maybe it would extend into class time. And Don McBee had heard me singing over, you know, probably by 12th grade. He came to me in the hallway and asked me to audition for the Fantastics.
Oh, my.
And because I was a tenor, and he wanted me to play the tenor. It was El Gallo. And I said, I'm not an actor. And but he insisted. And I auditioned and got the part. And then after that, there was a television show called Family Counselor, and he asked me to audition for that.
Oh, my.
And I thought, well, this was kind of fun, and it was all improvisation for that. And so I was to play the son of an alcoholic during this improv, and it's, at some point we're supposed to get in a tussle. And I kicked the table at some point, and it hit his leg.
Oh, my. That's pure Stanislavski there.
I got a letter in the mail. They wanted me. They promised it was not because stereotyping, because I had long hair to my waist almost, and I was to play a gay son of an alcoholic father. Mm-hmm. So that I got into acting a little bit, and that was in Columbia. And by that time, I guess Barney Bohannon and his wife were
Patsy.
Involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Patsy were involved in
Howard County Youth Operetta.
Yes, but Don McBee had yep. a program. I forget mm-hmm. what it was. Which show was that? Oliver. And they were in yep. that. And they knew me from the music scene. I didn't really know them. And then after I graduated, I wanted to do a coffee house. So I asked Slayton House, since I had been involved there, it turned out Barney was the manager, if we could do one there. He agreed for 10% of the door. So I didn't have to pay a rental fee. The admission was $1. So he'd make maybe $20, $30 at that much.
Oh, those were the days, my friend.
And he'd give me the key, and I just, you know, the place I was all mine, and we'd do it for a couple of years, and then I ended up doing it at the other barn. So, yes, there were mm-hmm. coffee houses mm-hmm. going on.
Yeah.
And so I ended up doing more bookings. I would perform there regularly, and I would book other acts. That led to the Columbia Association's Lakefront Summer Festival. I was teaching guitar for a living, and someone had pointed out to me in the newspaper, Columbia Association was looking for a new coordinator for the Lakefront Festival. Oh, it sounded perfect. Sounds fun. And I met with Jackie Dewey, who was the community services vice president. Yep. And she knew me from high school, from my performances, mm-hmm. hired me on the spot. So it came with connections that I didn't even know I had.
That's
but they
the way
knew,
it works
they knew
in this
who
town.
I was. Yep. So I ended up doing that. And during the summers, I ended up in the Howard County Music Theater thing they had, mm-hmm. summer theater, doing, what did I do, South Pacific. And the tenor parts, mm-hmm. I did like 3 or 4. But I really didn't consider myself an actor, but it was fun to do.
Right.
And I was, I guess, good at it. But music was my thing. So I was doing the Lakefront Festival. And so I became more of a producer, presenter, promoter than a performer. So my performing fell back. I would do it not as much. So I did that for 33 years.
You know, that wow. sort of brings us to present.
Present, yes.
Because I ran into you at the Soundry, and so I know that that's just your, like, passion fun job, but
yes,
what a fun place to be, and that is sort of now the new present of Columbia and sort of has taken over for the whole coffee house kind of work that you had previously done.
It's very
done.
Similar, only on a high-end yeah. scale.
Yeah.
In between, when I was still doing music, I got married, and music and guitar teaching wasn't enough income, and I went into real estate with Remax and did that for about 20 years, doing music.
Sure.
That paid for me to be able to do the music.
Yep.
But I went into the Lakefront Festival for 33 years, and I think that was till about 2011 or 2012 or something. And that was on a bid. It turned out at some point during the series, Columbia Association put it on, had to go out for bid. And I always would win the bid. But back in 2012 or something, they got a new purchasing manager. And somehow, I didn't get the bid. Devastating. Devastating. It hit my income real big because I was paid very well.
Yeah.
And my passion, it turned out to be a door opening. One door closing, as much as
sounds
it hurt.
Sounds trite, but it happens.
As much as it hurt.
Well, passion is a key word here, because I don't know if you were ever passionate about the Nutcracker, but Deborah DeVoe has written a book, and she's going to talk about her passion of both dance and writing.
And I'm excited because you are my shero, Deb. I mean, you did it. You
shero.
Said you are. Yeah, you did it. You told me you were going to, and you worked on it for a long time. So tell us, we know a little bit about your past, so tell us how you hit present with this.
I grew up in ballet in Buffalo. That's where I grew up. And I studied with people from the Ballet Russe. And I was very fortunate because my roots into ballet go way, way back. And I taught ballet here for many years. And I also teach at Glen Elg Country School. And I was teaching third grade a bunch of years ago, and a little girl wanted a ballet chapter book. And of course, that's my thing. As a child, I read ballet stories, and I would stay up too late in bed under the covers with a light in fourth grade reading ballet biographies. And I went to look for a ballet chapter book, and there wasn't anything that was any good that had any substance. So I'm there, So I just had some ideas, so I started to write about it, and I ended up on the Nutcracker. So it's actually a time-traveling chapter book, probably for children ages 7 to 10, where they go through the earth and they time travel back to the first Nutcracker in St. Petersburg, Russia.
That is amazing.
And so what happens is, not only do they learn the ballet steps, but there's six of them, boys and girls, with their ballet teacher, and they actually learn about auditioning. The star of the book, Marty, wants a huge role in the Nutcracker, and she only gets to be a mouse. And she's so upset. And
That's a subplot there. All right.
Well, it's a backstage intrigue where you don't get what you want. So what do you do? So the whole story is about her working through this and with her friends. And, of course, her BFF, her best girlfriend forever, gets to be in the party scene. So she has a much bigger part and makes friends with a little Russian girl, which is even worse. So it just goes on and on. But they do perform in the first Nutcracker Ballet.
But she was the best mouse ever.
Well, there's more to it.
You're going to have to read the book, Mo. Stop guessing the ending.
Okay.
This is like the Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney kind of movie where somebody gets injured and they get to, see if they can get in there. So there's more to it than that.
So are you bionic? Because, I mean, you teach school, you still teach, right? Aren't you still presently teaching?
Yeah, I teach ballet at L'Etoile in Columbia.
Okay, tell us about that.
I teach in Columbia at the L'Etoile Ballet Studio in the Academy. And we have a Nutcracker coming up on Saturday, this Saturday at the Jim Rouse Theater, November 24th at 5 p.m. And it's a very Russian Nutcracker and very true to the original.
It is. I saw it last year and I was wowed by it. I surely was. So, but you also teach school full time too, right?
I do.
So
I
do you eat and sleep, or you just throw that in on occasion?
I try to get enough sleep, but I never do.
Well, I am absolutely excited about reading this, and I'm really, the plot is fabulous. I love the illustration, because now I see the time travel piece and connect it, you know, through the illustration.
And the title of the book is, and where can we get it?
Okay, it's Ballet Buster's Leap into the First Nutcracker by Deborah DeVoe, illustrated by Carol Hayes. And you can go to Amazon, and it's there for $10.99.
All right. Hey, holiday gift giving for sure. So, okay, so now we got to get to the future just a little bit, okay? And so what are you looking at for the future? Are you going to write the next sequel to this, Deb? Or?
Well, the Ballet Busters are going to jump into the Sleeping Beauty for the next book.
I knew you had something. I wasn't even ready for that.
And then after that is Swan Lake. And they'll probably go back to the Swan Lake, the first one in the United States. So they'll discover where that is in the 1940s and go back to that.
All right.
So we're going to put them in different eras.
Wow, you have your future rolling. Okay, what about you, Rick? What do you foresee for your future?
Well, as a performer and as I at one point in the late 90s, mid-90s, I got involved with the music in my church, a contemporary music service. And in probably 2005, I became the music director for the church, for the contemporary service. And my wife and my son and also play every Sunday. And I've been teaching guitar as well.
And what church is that?
St. Mark's Episcopal in Highland at Hallshop Road and 216. And so my future has evolved into more performing as a Christian performing artist. And I'm a songwriter, and that's all I write about. My early years in high school and later, it was love songs and this and that. But I had an experience with a retreat about the study of Christ. And I made a promise to God at that time. Every song I write from here on out will be for you. And that is the way it's been. And so I am now the music director, and I have played at retreats, leading the worship music for that. So I continue to do that, and now that I'm free from the Lakefront Festival, and I have more time, because those were all my evenings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And weekends. Yep. So I'm able to do more of that reaching out. And what I've learned also from guitar teaching was that it was more than the lesson and the performing itself, Deb, as you would know, that it becomes a part of the student's well-being and growth as a person into the world. And I would have a couple of students, the parents would come back to me later, and I met one at JK's.
I personally love that. I'm going to use that thought. I'm going to use that because I have so many since I retired from Centennial 17 years ago, I have had a couple of hundred voice students.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, you know, it sticks to, you know, it's like McBee throwing out the fish hook and reeling you in, and Craig Ballou and Jim Traber and Jimmy Cripe and all those guys, you know, that get drawn into the performing arts and still are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key to it, to find a purpose and to find what you want to do and how it does enrich your life. I love that.
Yes. That became more, even those that didn't move on to music, there were some young kids. I remember one that didn't practice much, and we'd come in and we'd just work on it again over and over every week. And I met his mother at JK's Pub one night, and she just thanked me profusely because I was like the father figure. She was a single mother. Mm-hmm. And it became over the years that it was reaching out and being there for someone to help them through life.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that's what we all have in common here. Yep. And that's a wonderful thing, is that we have contributed to the youth and through the past, present, and future of the Columbia Arts. And I am so happy that Rick LaRocca and Deb DeVoe, both great big names here in Columbia, came to our studio, and thank you for all of your contributions. Get on Amazon and buy Ballet Buster's Leap into the First Nutcracker. Read that before the next two sequels come out, because she's writing them.
Great. Thank you very much. It's been great to be here.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to be with all my old-time friends and the other ghosts of Christmas past.
Yes, likewise. And happy holidays from Razzle Dazzle Radio.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.